Hello and welcome to Behind the Bar Show. I'm your host, Mr. Martini, aka Tim Morrison. I cannot believe this topic hasn't come up before, but on this episode, we're going to talk about a very important ingredient, vermouth. During our break, we'll feature a quote from W. Somerset Maugham. So, on with the show. Hello all and welcome to the 59th episode. Before we start talking about vermouth, let's get a few other things out of the way. Where are my voice letters? I announced I had a new voice line for Behind the Bar Show during the last episode. It's 559-WE-DRINK or area code 559-933-7465. I had a message from Paul in Sauca for the last episode, and then I received a couple text messages from Dennis in Calgary and Ryan in Temecula, California. Thank you, guys. So how about you? Why don't you call in and leave a comment with your favorite cocktail recipe or any questions you may have? Or how about a funny story or something that happened at a bar? Call in with anything. You can also send a text message to 559-WE-DRINK in case you're out at the bar and have a quick question and you want to ask me. Just text it, and who knows, you know, if I'm available to receive that text, may just respond back quicker than you think. So area code 559 might be a long distance number, but it doesn't mean much nowadays considering all the nationwide mobile phone plans. But if you're wanting to call from your home and don't want to incur a long distance charge, then go to my website at www.behindthebarshow.com and click on the big call me button on the right hand side of the screen. You can punch in your phone number and Google Voice will actually call you directly and then connect you to my voice line. That way there's no long distance charges whatsoever. So I love comments. Grab your phone, call. Now, if you fear having your voice on my show, fine. At least send me an email at behindthebarshow@gmail.com. Also, why are you not on my Facebook page yet? I've had some great posts going on there with other listeners from around the world on all kinds of cocktail topics. It's a lot of fun, so look me up there. And it's a great place for constant Behind the Bar Show action. Also, be sure to check out my website at www.behindthebarshow.com, where I occasionally post extra postings on product reviews, cocktail news, etc. Now, for the shameless advertising plugs, with the holidays coming up, maybe you want to get some bar books or barware to a friend as a gift. Well, check out the Amazon links on the right side of my website after the My Links section. It's in a section called advertisement. There's a lot of personally recommended products there, and if you want to show your appreciation for this show and help me with the budgeting, you can help me by clicking on any of those Amazon product links the next time you want to make an Amazon purchase. You don't have to buy the product link you clicked on from my site. Just go to Amazon through one of those links from behindthebarshow.com and then click away to any other product that you're looking at on Amazon. Find whatever you'd like to purchase and do so normally. By going through one of the links on my website, you help me out by having Amazon send me a referral fee. Costs you absolutely nothing, and I get some change in the process, which does go towards the cost of the show, and I do really appreciate the help. Okay, so listening, the listener feedback is going to be extremely fast. First, I posted on my website that this show was on the way, and I received a comment from Professor Kitty, looking forward to the episode. So I just wanted to say hello, thanks for the comment on my blog, and I hope you get what you're looking for out of this episode. Jason from Vegas emailed to say he would have called this question in, but since he hasn't seen a show in a while, he thought he'd get a quicker response via email. Well, yeah, you're right. you did get a response the next day from your email. I'd still love those calls, though. If I got plenty of them, I could put shows together quicker, full of questions, stories, and recipes. Jason said someone left a bag of potatoes in an unused cupboard, and he ended up with a fruit fly problem. So all of his liquors have speed pours. You see the problem here. He'd rather not pour out hundreds of dollars of alcohol, but also doesn't want to drink bugs, so he's asking for a trick for filtering and rebottling. He thought of pouring through funnels with cheesecloth, but wanted to know if there was anything faster. Well, here's my answer. In San Francisco, it rains during the winter. When the raining season begins, the ants show up, those tiny annoying sugar ants. Well, one year after a holiday party, I had speed pourers in all my bottles sitting out, and those pesky ants went after all my sweet liqueurs. I definitely know how you feel, because it was just horrible pouring it all down the drain. Now, I throw a lot of parties, and I pour my spirits for others. It was my decision to take the hit and not pour alcohol that had ants floating in it, even if I strained them out. In a bar, I would expect them to destroy any bottles that had bugs. At home, for your own spirits, it's your call. That said, if you've decided to save your spirits and you already have the right idea, you need a fine mesh sieve that's fine enough to catch the bugs, and you can also line it with cheesecloth to catch more as well. You may be catching the whole bugs, but there could be other bits getting through, so keep that in mind. If you're going to leave your speed pours in your bottles, I would recommend a little preventive maintenance by wrapping the top with a little piece of saran wrap when they're not going to be in use, and make sure it covers the air hole too. Prevention is better than pouring out all your booze. Now, Jason, your response back had me laughing. You stated next time in Vegas, you owe me a drink. Let's just make sure it's bug-free if you don't mind. Thanks again for the email, Jason. I hope you got your bug problem under control. Okay, so that's it for listener feedback. Now on with the show. How could I get this far in my show without dedicating a full episode to the very important ingredient, vermouth? It's a must for a true martini, Martinez, or Manhattan, as well as many classic cocktails created back when vermouth was in its heyday and was as popular as vodka is now. It's been sipped for ages on its own as an aperitif. It's an ingredient that has been looked upon in a bad light for no good reason. And I, for one, am ready to stand up for vermouth and explain what it is and why we should be using more of it in our cocktails. The word vermouth comes from the German word Vermut, which means wormwood. An ingredient used originally in the process of making vermouth, although it's an ingredient best known for absinthe. It's generally accepted that vermouth's creator was Antonio Benedetto Carpano of Turin, Italy in 1786. He was inspired by a German wine that used wormwood. So of course, that makes me wonder if the beginning of vermouth really started in Germany, but it was Carpano in Italy who made it famous. Around 1813, an herbalist in France by the name of Joseph Noilly started making a drier vermouth. This is why we tend to think of sweet vermouth as Italian vermouth, while dry vermouth is considered French vermouth, even though in modern times both sweet and dry are made in both France and Italy. Shoot, you can add US to that list too. I say that because in 1999, Via Vermouth, both sweet and extra dry, hit the market and is made by a winery in California. This is a vermouth made with orange muscat grapes and is very flavorful. It's meant to be enjoyed on its own as an aperitif. Anyway, when we think of vermouth, we think of sweet and dry. Dry is normally clear to yellowish, while sweet is normally reddish or brownish in color. This isn't to say that dry vermouth is made out of white grapes, while sweet is made out of red grapes. I've heard this mistakenly said many times before. All vermouth are typically made with white grapes. The sweet vermouths that are reddish in color actually get their color from the caramelized sugars used to make it. I also added that sweet vermouth is normally reddish because there are some sweet vermouths that at least look like a dry vermouth because they're not red at all, but instead clear to yellowish. Two examples would be Cinzano Bianco and Martini & Rossi Bianco. Again, the coloring is normally due to the sugars. Now, how about alcohol content? Dry vermouth tends to be a little stronger than sweet vermouth, but both are low percentage when compared to other liquors. While dry vermouth is around 18% alcohol by volume, sweet vermouth is only around 15 to 16% alcohol by volume. This low alcohol content makes it a great mixer in cocktails as it can smooth even the harshest base spirit. It also means it is extremely smooth to drink on its own, maybe chilled with a lemon twist. As for sugar content, dry vermouth contains a maximum of 5% residual sugar, while sweet vermouth can have up to about 15% residual sugar. Now let's delve even deeper into this ingredient. Vermouth is basically an aromatized, fortified wine. It's a liquor made from wine and flavored with herbs. It's a fortified with more alcohol, usually brandy, which if you think about it makes sense. After all, brandy is wine that has been distilled and aged. This gets into why vermouth can be extremely different from one distiller over another and why the same brand may taste different in a batch made for the US over other countries. Vermouth is a very simple process, but it can be very complex as well, just as complex as making bitters. This is because there's so many variables to it. First, they choose a wine and add up to 40 herbs, barks, spices, seeds, peels, you name it, or even more. These botanicals can be soaked in the wine to impart their flavor gradually, or a small batch of wine could be simmered with the botanicals to really pull out their flavors and then cooled and poured back into the mix. Doing this is a way to bring out more of the bitterness in the botanicals, but the process is completely up to the manufacturer how they decide to do this. Next, they fortify it with brandy. This will stabilize the wine, making it more shelf stable and help reach the desired 15, 16, or 18% alcohol by volume. It also goes through aging processes along the way. Now, all this doesn't mean it can last forever opened on your counter. It's still wine after all, and it can be affected by air contact. So see, I told you there were many variables to making vermouth, and it's why one vermouth can taste different over another. Also remember, you can add caramelized sugars to add the sweetness and can also change the color of your vermouth. I personally find the dry vermouth to be a bit more delicate than the sweet vermouth. While I'm absolutely fine keeping an open bottle, recapped bottle of sweet vermouth sitting on my bar with my other spirits, especially since it doesn't last very long in my house, I don't do this with dry vermouth. I prefer to buy smaller bottles and keep the opened ones in the refrigerator chilled. Again, they don't last long in my house, but doing this makes sure that the dry vermouth is always as fresh as can be. To me, it seems sweet vermouth fortified with the higher sugar content can stay on the counter longer, while the dry should really stay chilled to keep it fresher. It's also nice because I prefer a dry vermouth chilled with a lemon twist as an aperitif over sweet, just my preference. So, you like wine, you like herbal flavors, and you like brandy. Why don't you like vermouth? Why is it so many people jump on the bandwagon to keep vermouth out of their Manhattans and martinis? Is it just because it's what you heard growing up? I challenge all of you to throw out all the talk you've heard about vermouth. Shoot, even throw out what I'm saying right now. I just want you to sit down and taste slightly chilled dry vermouth and a sweet vermouth. Grab a bottle of Noilly Pratt dry vermouth and a bottle of Carpano Antica or Dolan. Yes, there's always Martini and Rossi too. Try them with an open mind. Really focus on all the flavors within the ingredients. Vermouth is not a bad word and should never have reached the stigmatism it did. The biggest blow to vermouth were all the alcoholic actors after Prohibition who just wanted their booze. They thought, why dilute my vodka or gin, which is 40% alcohol by volume, with a spirit that's no more than 18% alcohol by volume? They just wanted their booze. Thus, all the quotes about the waving a bottle of vermouth over your so-called martini came about, and it's why the proportion of vermouth in a martini slowly dwindled away to the point where most bars, and I'm not talking about the newer cocktail bars that are embracing the true cocktail revolution, but most bars, you'll be lucky to get a bartender to put the right amount of vermouth in your martini or Manhattan, even if you beg. And definitely don't expect any orange bitters, but that's a different sermon. Don't mindlessly follow the flow and let this anti-vermouth movement that's continued to take steam since post-prohibition tell you what you should think about vermouth. Clear your mind, pour a glass, and try. Did it kill you? No. Did you like it? Yes? Maybe? Kinda? Well, now try it in a cocktail. And I'll give you some recipes to try after the break. Just give it a try with an open mind and see what you think after that. First, let's talk about a specific dry vermouth. Noilly Pratt is definitely my favorite dry vermouth, especially the new recipe available in the U.S., or should I say the original 1813 recipe. Yes, they kept the best recipe for themselves and made a milder blend for our American palates. Fortunately for the cocktail revolution, they've decided to do away with the American blend and finally give us the good stuff. Man, I love this vermouth. Give me a chilled aperitif of Noilly Pratt before dinner and I'm a happy man. My personal opinion is Martini and Rossi dry vermouth cannot even come close to the wonderful flavors present and in a freshly opened bottle of Noilly Pratt. Just remember to buy those little bottles and keep it in the fridge. Of course, whenever I have a spirit I really enjoy, I like to talk about it, and this should be no different. That said, let's talk Noilly Pratt. It's the first dry French vermouth created in 1813 by Joseph Noilly. And in 1844, it was exported to the United States, where it became a staple in the cocktailing world. Noilly Pratt makes their dry vermouth by first aging their wine. This is quite a process, starting with the different varietals of wine, all being aged separately in 100-year-old Canadian oak vats for 8 months. Then they're moved to smaller oak casks, which sit outdoors for 12 months. Next, it's moved out to 2,000 casks sitting out in the open air where they slowly mature while being exposed to the elements. It's during this time they lose their fruity flavors and instead take on a full-bodied dry flavor and a richer color. After this intense aging, it goes to sit again indoors for another 6 months before all those separately aged varietals are blended together and fortified with natural grape juice and alcohol raspberry and lemon fruit liqueurs. After fortification, the 20 herbs and spices come into play, where they're put right into the wine and stirred by hand every day for 3 weeks to fully infuse. The herbs and spices are removed through a press on the bottom of each cask, and then the vermouth is filtered several times and set to rest for another 6 weeks in oak casks. From soup to nuts, it takes 2 years for the vermouth to be made. Now, before I start getting voice messages telling me how to say it right, let me jump the gun and say, bite me. You can call it Noilly Pratt or Noilly Pratt for all I care. I know what ingredient you're talking about, and you know what I'm talking about. I say Noilly Pratt, and I'll be happy to tell you why. Both the words Noilly and Pratt come from the last names. While you would expect the T to be silent in French, this is a name, and I believe it's Welsh. If I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me. Listen, this vermouth was created by Joseph Noilly, yes, but the name Noilly Pratt comes from Joseph's son, Louis Noilly, and his son-in-law, Claudius Pratt, who joined up and created the Noilly Pratt Company in 1855. So feel free to say it in a strong, pretentious accent, but for me, I'm sticking to say it like their names, and not to mention all the videos of top executive French chefs saying Noilly Pratt. Enough said, fini. Now, if I'm saying Noilly wrong and it should be Noilly, well, whatever. So, that should just about do it. Let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll go through some recipes. Noilly Pratt is a necessary component of a dry martini. Without it, you can make a sidecar, a gimlet, a white lady, or a gin and bitters, but you cannot make a dry martini cocktail. Quote from W. Somerset Maugham, 1958. Now, how perfect was that quote? For this episode, at least, W. Somerset Maugham had many famous quotes. He was, after all, one of the highest paid authors in the world in the 1930s. One of his other, I'd say, his most famous quote, at least in my opinion, was, quote, "Martini should always be stirred, not shaken, so the molecules lie sensuously on top of one another," unquote. Let's just say he really liked talking about his booze. So before we go into recipes, I'm sure someone out there is thinking all that information on the brand name Noilly Pratt was great, but how about going into detail on a sweet vermouth? Well, maybe next time. Of course, if there's any vermouth makers out there that would like to be interviewed, that could definitely make for a great Vermouth Part 2 episode, now wouldn't it? Hint, hint, vermouth companies. So I wouldn't be Mr. Martini if I didn't start out with the martini itself. You've heard me give many times this recipe: mix 3 parts gin to 1 part dry vermouth and a dash or two of orange bitters to taste. Stir with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Garnish with your choice of an olive or lemon twist. I personally love to use Plymouth gin and Noilly Pratt dry vermouth in mine. Now, traditionally, the martini was made using equal parts gin and vermouth. And nowadays, that's considered a 50-50 martini. Made with the correct gin and the correct dry vermouth that go well together, a 50-50 can be incredible. I had one at the Slanted Door in San Francisco that had me melting in my seat. It was an unbelievable drink. For something a bit different, try taking the martini recipe into a perfect variation. You may have heard me mention perfect before. It's a drink variation containing contains vermouth where you use equal parts dry and sweet. So try mixing up 2 ounces gin, 1/2 ounce dry vermouth, and 1/2 ounce sweet vermouth. Still add your bitters and stir with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass and garnish with a lemon twist. Next, try an Algonquin cocktail, spelled Algonquin. So it's one of those funny naming words, but it's named after the famous Algonquin Hotel in New York City, built in 1902. Shake well 1 1/2 ounce rye whiskey, 3/4 ounce dry vermouth, and 3/4 ounce pineapple juice. Strain into a chilled cocktail glass. The Affinity cocktail is made with equal parts, so let's just say 1 ounce of each, scotch, dry vermouth, and sweet vermouth, with 2 dashes of Angostura. This is basically a perfect Rob Roy. I prefer using blended scotch. You most likely wouldn't want to use a single malt scotch that's really heavy on the peat and smoke. It'll completely overpower the vermouth in this drink. Stir this and strain into a chilled cocktail glass and garnish with a lemon twist. Another drink to try would be the Fourth Degree cocktail. This is equal parts again, but let's play with 3/4 ounces this time. Do equal parts dry vermouth, sweet vermouth, and gin, and add a bar spoon of absinthe to it. If you cannot get your hands on absinthe, then try a pastis like Pernod or Saint. Stir with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Squeeze a lemon peel over the drink and drop it in. How about a Rolls-Royce cocktail? Stir well with ice 1.5 ounce gin, 1/2 ounce dry vermouth, 1/2 ounce sweet vermouth, and a couple dashes of Benedictine. Strain into a chilled cocktail glass, and as you can see, this is basically yet another perfect style martini using Benedictine instead of orange bitters. Want something sweeter? Try the Dubliner. 2 ounce Irish whiskey, 1/2 ounce sweet vermouth, 1/2 ounce Grand Marnier, and dash of orange bitters. Stir with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass, garnish with a cherry. Okay, before I go, I promised a coworker that I'd add this tip. My coworker John says try sprinkling dry vermouth over your burger while cooking it. I haven't tried doing this on a burger, but he swears it will make the hamburger absolutely incredible. So, give that a try. That's it for now. There's tons and tons of drinks using vermouth. I didn't think it necessary to really go back through all the recipes that I've given in the past episodes, like the Manhattan and such. I've even had vermouth used in dessert-style drinks. They're great ingredients. Open yourself up to trying more recipes using them. Also remember that different brands of vermouth have different flavors, and some work better with certain brand spirits than others. If you try one recipe, maybe one of the ones I've given today, and it's not exactly what you like, maybe try a different type of vermouth or base spirit that has a different flavor profile. You know what I mean. Good mixology comes from knowing your ingredients and knowing what flavors complement each other. Well, that's all for 59th episode. Time to start thinking about the Big 6-0. Have questions or comments? Feel free to send me an email at behindthebarshow@gmail.com, and it may make it on the next episode. Remember my new voice line at 559-WE-DRINK, and that's area code 559-933-7465. And remember to check me out on Facebook and at my website, www.behindthebarshow.com. Cheers, everyone. Please drink responsibly and don't drink and drive. Hey, show's over. Why are you still listening? Tell you what, since you're still around, let me give you a bonus recipe. I decided to add this at the end of the episode since I haven't posted yet. This is a beverage I whipped up after finishing the recording. Now, the exact brands are specific, as I cannot tell you what it tastes like if you're using a different brand base rum. You see, I'm using an incredible aged rum called Ron Añejo Aniversario Pampero. This rum is fantastic on its own, but I decided to make a drink out of it with sweet vermouth. Here's the recipe. Use 1.5 ounce Ron Añejo Aniversario Pampero, 1/2 ounce Dolin sweet vermouth, 1 dash orange bitters, and 1/4 ounce Cointreau. Stir with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. This drink is amazing. Enjoy!